Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for the Doctors Roundtable, a forum for conversations with Atlanta's leading doctors and thought leaders about cutting-edge trends and topics in health, wellness, and lifestyle issues. Here's our host, Tanya Mack.
Good afternoon, everyone. And I tell you, I hate to kind of be in the studio. It's the first sunny day that we've had in many, many days in Atlanta, but I'm thrilled to be talking to all of you. We have a great show today. I have as my guest Dr. Kenneth Neufeld from the Thomas Eye Group. He's a very special guy because he's one of the very rare oculoplastic surgeons in our city. I think there's only about 10 or 20 of them in the city. Is that right, Dr. Neufeld?
Correct.
Very good. Very good. So we're thrilled to have you here. Let me tell you a little bit about Dr. Neufeld. He is done his medical school in New York, Syracuse University, and decided to go into ophthalmology and not stop there. Went on to kind of get into this oculoplastic surgery specialty, which is a very complicated, and we're going to talk about how you got there in a minute, specialty, and did his oculoplastic reconstructive and laser surgery training at Duke University Medical Center. Is that right?
That's correct.
Very good. And he's been at the Thomas Eye Group for about the past 6 years, and he has a very interesting specialty and sees quite a variety of diseases and treatments and uses all kinds of tools, which we're going to get into today. So welcome
to
the show.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
I appreciate you being here. Let's start off just with this introduction. I know that it's kind of an emerging specialty. It's a rare specialty. A lot of people have not even heard the word oculoplastic surgeon before. I think they get oculars around eye.
Correct.
And you do a combination of both surgery and ophthalmology together, right?
Right. Well, oculoplastics is sort of a merger between ophthalmology and plastic surgery. And so it focuses on the eye and the area surrounding the eye, the orbit, and the surrounding soft tissues and bones. So it really just merges two fields into one.
Okay, so you get to treat patients and be a surgeon.
That's exactly right.
Which is a couple double duty for you. So
correct.
That's great. Well, let's talk a little bit about how you decided to get into that specialty and kind of what your course was, since it's kind of rare.
Sure. Well, in medical school, we have to choose a specialty to go into, and that usually hits at around your third or fourth year when you have to start planning for your subsequent training. And so it's a narrowing down process that led me to ophthalmology.
You kind of go through rotations, right?
So you get
to try a little bit of everything.
Exactly.
Before you decide.
You wet your feet a little bit and you see what sticks and what you like and what you don't like, more importantly, so you can sort of rule that out. And you figure out where you can best see yourself, which is a hard thing to do as a medical student, because your role as a medical student is usually a lot different than that of a practicing doctor. Mm-hmm. But you try and see yourself and what you can do and what you like to do and go from there. So for me, the things that I like to do ended up matching best with ophthalmology, and so I went for it.
Very good. And you decided not only to pursue ophthalmology, then was there some time period that went by that you practiced and you went back to your specialty, or did you just keep going?
No, it's actually – when I started my ophthalmology residency, I had no idea that there were subspecialties within ophthalmology.
Okay.
And so once I started, I became exposed to all these different subspecialties, and I couldn't believe it that there was a subspecialty that focused just on the cornea. And
right. You thought you were already
– Yeah, I thought eye doctors and eye doctors. So – there was a subspecialty on the cornea, just the retina, just the one disease of glaucoma, and then this field called oculoplastics. And going through my residency, you get exposed to all these things, and you see the different types of patients and different types of problems that come in various different clinics that you attend. And so for me, oculoplastics was the most broad-ranging topic and specialty within the subspecialty of ophthalmology. So there's lots of different types of problems you can treat, from cosmetic problems to functional problems to trauma to congenital problems. And it's a big variety that one can treat all within one very, very subspecialized field.
Mm-hmm. And these subspecialties, even the training isn't widely available, so there's not fellowships. And typically when there is a program, there's only one fellow in the program?
Correct. It's pretty tight. There's only about 20 or 30 oculoplastic fellowships out there, and so it's a relatively small community.
Is it a 2 or 3 year fellowship?
They range from 1 or 2.
Okay, very good. Well, let's get into actually your specialty itself, and why don't you educate us a little bit about what are common types of procedures? You mentioned broadly like trauma, but
right.
For the patients out there, what would they understand?
Right. The field of oculoplastic surgery is encompasses things from repositioning the brow, which is above the orbit, which is the bony area that the eye resides in, upper eyelid ptosis, which is a drooping of the eyelid. So when the eyelid covers part of your cornea or covers part of your eye, looks like you're half asleep, that's a ptosis, versus just extra skin or overhang skin, which is called dermatocalasis, which is a fancy word for just extra skin. Tumors around the eye, skin cancers, tumors behind the eye, and orbital tumors can happen from either primary cancers or metastases can end up behind your eye. Orbital fractures of the bones, congenital malformations requiring reconstructive surgery, defects around the eyes created after skin cancers and skin cancer removals. So basically we have to put things back together again to make them function and look as normal as possible. Problems with the tear duct, the tear drainage system. There's a tiny little tube that drains the water or the tears that we all make from the corner of our eye into the back of the nose. And for a variety of different reasons, that can get obstructed or blocked or impinged upon and result in infections and problems. So we deal with that too.
So you deal with trauma, disease, a little bit of a very broad scope of conditions.
Correct. And then
problems.
Cosmetic stuff too in terms of upper eyelid surgery, lower eyelid surgery, taking bags away, taking extra skin away, repositioning fatty tissue to make the eyes look a little rejuvenated, and laser resurfacing, which is most likely to think about like almost like power washing your driveway.
Okay.
Just resurface the skin and really just regenerates the tissue and makes things look a little healthier.
And how do patients find you? Do patients refer? I know some doctors refer for like cancers or traumas or things like that.
But. Yeah, a lot of referrals from – I'm in a practice which has got about 25 doctors in it at the Thomas Eye Group. And mm-hmm. so we get a lot of patients who come through the doors who become aware of the services that we can offer. Other subspecialties like dermatology and plastic surgery and ENT are common people that we associate with it, share patients back and forth and coordinate cases with. And then word of mouth from patients who've had surgeries before, their family members, relatives, friends, coworkers.
Okay. And what were some of the tools of the trade? So you're a surgeon. You obviously have privileges to operate at what hospitals here in Atlanta?
I operated Northside and St. Joe's primarily. Mm-hmm. We have an outpatient surgery center where I do almost all the cases, where there's a full certified anesthesiologist who takes care of you, take care of the patients and make sure they're safe and comfortable.
And where is that in the city?
That's next to St. Joe's Hospital in the 5671 building.
Okay, so you're right on Pill Hill there.
Right up there.
Right up
right
on
in the middle.
The thick of things.
Right.
And tell us a little bit about some of the tools of the trade that you use. You use lasers?
Right. Well, my fellowship was a very laser-centric fellowship. And my preceptor was a woman who trained under the physician who first started using lasers in eyelid surgery. And so that was a big part of my training and certainly influenced a lot about how I practice. The laser that I use essentially takes the place of a scalpel. So there's no need to cut through the skin with a scalpel or a knife or a scissor or anything. The laser is able to do that, I think, a little more effectively. It seals off blood vessels as it cuts, so the surgery is usually very, very dry and relatively bloodless, which makes the anatomy pristine, I think, the surgery quicker and allows patients a little bit quicker recovery than had they had that surgery done by other means.
So how safe is that? Because just as a layperson thinking like lasers around my eyelids,
I know
LASIK, a lot of people do that, but behind the eyes and everything else, that sounds kind of scary to me.
Right. Well, it sounds scarier than it really is, but I certainly understand that concern. But we take all the measures that are necessary mm-hmm. to protect the eyes. Your eye is protected with a metal plate okay. the entire time, so the laser can't penetrate that. You have to go really far out of your way to try and cause an injury.
And are those just in the front, or do you use lasers actually, like if you're removing a tumor behind the eye, you could actually also use lasers?
No, the laser's mostly for skin and dissecting okay. the tissue in the front. Behind okay. the eye, we have to use other means to get back there.
Okay.
And drills and saws and things like that, which are a little more
okay. involved. We won't even talk about
those
tools.
Yeah, I don't want to scare anyone off with that
stuff. We don't want to tune out right now, so yeah. we'll get back to the good stuff. But any other particular tools that are unusual to your specialty?
I guess the most unusual thing is that they're just tiny. I mean, the yeah. instruments are tiny. They're microscopic instruments because we're dealing with millimeters. You know, oculoplastic surgery is truly a surgery of millimeters that a millimeter too short can cause a big problem. Mm-hmm. And so the instruments we use are very, very precise, very microscopic. We use magnifying glasses in order to see things clearly, to make sure that we're getting everything that we need and visualizing everything with as much clarity as we can.
Mm-hmm. I remember that feeling. I used to be a NICU nurse, and when I'd have to start IVs
the babies had a tiny,
the little teeny thread.
Same type of deal. Tiny, everything's
get that
just
IV
micro.
In the vein as big as a hair on your head. Yes, yeah, so I understand what you're saying. Let's talk about patients that come to you. How do they kind of prepare? What's kind of when they come in for a consult, what happens?
Well, depending upon what they're referred in for, they usually have some expectation in their head, I think, of what they're in store for, mm-hmm. which isn't always accurate.
Mm-hmm. Setting expectations.
Setting expectations is important. Very, very important. Again, not unique to my specialty. Mm-hmm. I think any medical specialty, expectations are huge. And so I think it's just important to make sure patients are aware of what the issue is, why it happens, or why they have that problem, because it helps just a better understanding and them being part of the solution. I think it's, especially nowadays with the amount of information available, patients are very, very much involved in their own health care, which is, I think, is a great thing. There's a lot of information that's available. Sometimes it's not all that accurate, so it's important for the physician to ferret out what the patient has absorbed already that may or may not be accurate. But it's important to have them invested in their health care and their plan to get the treatment that they need.
Mm-hmm. Well, they'll be more compliant too.
Exactly.
I always tell patients, you know what, don't be the reason your surgery failed, be you. So,
correct.
Yeah, know what you're supposed to be doing and follow up. And
exactly. So it's a lot of communication, a lot of explaining, a lot of going through details as to what they can anticipate ahead of time, what the actual procedure will entail, and what they can expect afterwards. I think that's a big thing, and it takes a lot of anxiety away from patients, both leading up to and after surgery.
Well, let's talk a little bit about some of those categories of things in terms of, you said it depends upon what kind of surgery they're coming in for a problem. So let's kind of just walk through. For a trauma, you're mostly going to see them in the hospital, is that right?
Well, initially you see them in the hospital, or they're referred to you straight from the hospital after a car accident or some sort of trauma, mm-hmm. Which results in a fracture or bony displacement or some other type of injury. And that there's usually a time frame on that you have to try. You want to try and get to it sooner rather than later, but you have to make sure that a lot of other moving parts are all taken into account. The first thing is to make sure the eyeball itself is stable and healthy and not injured, because it's a bit of a precarious situation to try and be operating on.
Because you're dealing with both soft tissue and hard tissue.
Correct.
So you've got to handle both.
Exactly. So there's a lot of manipulation that you need to do in resetting bones and fixing fractures. And if the eyeball itself is injured, you have to take on that with a little bit of a different perspective. Mm-hmm. And so it's important to sort of see what the overall status is of the eye and the orbital area before you embark upon addressing any one particular issue. Mm-hmm. That can lead to problems if you're not aware of the other stuff.
Okay. Totally different kind of patient that may come to you is for the cosmetic eye surgery. So that might be a patient self-referral, somebody that's happy with an eye procedure that they've had.
Yeah. Usually it's a family or friend, co-worker of someone that we've operated on. And again, their expectations need to be realistic as well. And it's important to be on the same page as to what I think that I can deliver and what the patient wants. And that's a real important thing. To make sure that those things are consistent.
Mm-hmm. I know that's very common in cosmetic surgery. We look in the mirror and we say, I'm sure he can turn me into
Julia Roberts,
right?
That becomes the realistic expectation. So, you know, the important thing, though, is not to make the person look like Julia Roberts, but to make them look like a healthier, more rested, improved version of themselves.
Right.
And I think that's really important not to get carried away. I mean, we all see the TV and we watch people, and certainly in other parts of the area and other parts of the country, who get a little carried away.
Yes.
And they just look a little bit silly.
Severe. They look very severe.
Severe is one word, yeah. So it's important, I think, to keep patients looking natural. You just mm-hmm. want to keep them looking like themselves, just a rested, rejuvenated mm-hmm. version of themselves.
The tissues are so thin around the eye. Is there anything that you use or I think, you know, just when we touch our eyes or we put our contacts in or we rub our eyes, anything around there, just it's so thin, we tend to think if anything is manipulated, it's going to have a really long treatment course to recover. I mean, I think people are concerned about what will I be in for if I...
Right. Well, the eyes, it gets a unique part of the body, and the skin is extremely thin, especially on the bottom eyelid. And again, that's why I alluded to the fact that it's a surgery of millimeters, because mm-hmm. If you're too short or you're too long a millimeter, you can have an issue. It's not as forgiving as some of the other areas on the body. And mm-hmm. so really to be precise is of utmost importance. Mm-hmm. And yeah, things take some time to heal. And we sort of set things and let the body take over. And so sometimes tweaking or modifying things is not unusual to really ensure that we're not being too aggressive initially in the healing process.
And for the cosmetic surgeries, is there anything that the patient has to do to prepare? Like I know sometimes they have to stop smoking or they can't wear contacts for a while. Or is there anything
right.
like that?
Well, I mean, anytime you're talking about making an incision on any part of the body, but in particular your face, you want to try and make sure the skin is as healthy as you can possibly get it, because that way the resulting scar will be minimal. Mm-hmm. The healing process will be expedited as much as possible. So staying out of the sun is a good thing to do. Smoking cessation is of utmost importance in any kind of reconstructive or cosmetic surgery, obviously for other health reasons too, but in particular when you're dealing with the skin and making incisions and expecting the soft tissues to heal. You really need to have everything in your favor to try and get that happening as quickly and as efficiently as possible.
So what would be like an average course? If I had an eye lift,
right.
What would I expect as far as when might I be able to go back to work or be recovered or
right.
not look
Low standard,
crazy?
Exactly. Hopefully you won't look crazy. But
for a few days, I probably will look
well,
crazy.
Well, no, actually, you know, if we have the surgery, there's no patches, there's no bandages.
Okay.
There's a tiny little row of microscopic stitches that go underneath the skin, and they stay in for about a week. You can see there's really no pain. Everyone gets a prescription for a painkiller, but usually people don't even need to get it filled.
Mm-hmm.
There's some antibiotic cream that goes on the stitches about 3 times a day just to prevent against the low likelihood of infection.
Do the stitches dissolve then if they're from the inside, or do they have to come be removed?
I take them out because the ones you take out, I think, leave a better resulting scar than do the ones that dissolve. But certainly there are circumstances where you can put in the dissolving ones. Ice as much as possible afterwards for the first couple of days, and that helps a lot with swelling. Mm-hmm. So by about a week, you're probably about 60 to 70% healed. And by about 2 weeks, probably close to 80 to 90% healed. Now, you don't usually see that much bruising. Again, I think that the laser provides that advantage that allows that kind of bloodless less bruising type of
effect.
So it's
more swelling, not so much discoloration.
Well, there's a little bit of swelling. Usually doesn't look like you get hit by a truck, but sometimes, you know, that's sort of what happens. Usually if patients are on blood thinners like aspirin or Plavix or Coumadin, they're more likely to have a bruising than do others.
Mm-hmm.
But usually it's pretty uneventful.
Okay, and it's outpatient procedure?
All outpatient procedure. Mm-hmm. You're awake.
Ooh, that sounds scary.
But with a little bit of sedation.
Okay.
So, again, there's an anesthesiologist sitting next
to you.
Will
I remember anything?
You won't remember a thing. It'll
Very
be the best
good.
Nap of your life.
Okay.
The anesthesiologist monitors everything the whole time, gives you whatever you need to make you nice and comfortable.
Okay, and then they have recovery right there, and then they'll go home.
You
later
go right
in
into the
day.
Recovery. You sit there until you're feeling great, and then you walk out and leave.
Okay. I've heard a little bit more. I always have thought about, in the cosmetic realm, a lot of my friends having eyelid, you know, the upper lid. Redone.
Right.
But I see now people are doing lower lid surgeries. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. The lower lids, it's a very complex issue because a lot of different problems that can happen there that would need a different solution to. So traditionally, extra bags or puffiness was just a little fat pocket that we all have normally that become more prominent and more noticeable. And so in the past, people have just consistently removed those fat pockets, which nowadays we're doing less and less of because we're trying to preserve fat now. And we're realizing that some of the aging changes involves a deflation or a descent of the fat in the face, and it makes the eye fat a little bit more noticeable simply because the surrounding areas have become deficient in fat. And so we could position or move the fatty tissue or inject fat from somewhere else. So I could do
so
a little
more like a smoothing out kind
yeah,
of
natural. Yeah, it's like a leveling out to sort of just replace what may have been there. And so we can do some liposuction and re-inject some of your own fat back into the area that seems to be deficient.
You do liposuction around my eye?
No, we take it out of your belly and then inject it back
into your
eye. So
to even it out. Okay.
Exactly, as a filler. We can use off-the-shelf fillers also.
This is your own filler. Okay.
This is sort of a natural one that we're doing more and more of. But you can do laser resurfacing, which we do frequently around the eyes to just rejuvenate and refresh the skin.
So tell me about what that would be like and how long of a course and what
sure.
would the result be?
Resurfacing, again, it's like power washing your driveway. Mm-hmm. You're taking the top layer off in parts. It's actually pretty amazing technology in that what the laser is doing is it's drilling tiny little microscopic holes into the skin. And what that does is it not only takes away some of the surface, it delivers heat to the tissue underneath the skin or the collagen. And that's what gives the skin its backbone. That's what gives its integrity. And so you're generating more of that, so the skin becomes more firm, more elastic, and healthier. And while the skin cells repopulate the surface, you get brand new baby skin. So it's a great procedure, and commonly we do that whenever we're dealing with anything on the lower eyelids in terms of either repositioning the fat.
Is that like a first step before the...
No, it's usually done all at the same go.
Okay.
Right. We can vaporize fat with the laser from the inside of the eyelid without having to make any skin incisions. The laser resurfacing is about a week worth of pinkness of the skin, which there's some maintenance that the patients need to do in terms of caring for it with putting on a special kind
topical.
Of cream. Topical, exactly. Mm-hmm. But after about a week, they're usually at the point where they could put makeup and cover up on for any residual pinkness. But it's a really powerful, nice way to rejuvenate the whole area around the eyes without having to necessarily make incisions and have a potential scar. And
would you only do that on some patients?
It depends.
The resurfacing depends on
if
the degree.
If they have sort of crepey looking skin without a lot of puffiness or hollowness, then you can get away with just doing laser. Sometimes we combine that with putting in a filler of some sort or removing fat or repositioning fat with a laser as well.
And what kind of potential complications are there? Like, what would be my risks potentially?
Right. Well, with any surgery, you know, there are always complications, so or potential complications. So bleeding and infection are complications that can happen, whether you're talking about eyelid surgery, foot surgery, knee surgery, hip surgery, doesn't make a difference. The eyes are very vascular, and that makes infection less common than it does other places. We have you put on antibiotics, cream to prevent against that or to limit that risk. Bleeding around the eye is, again, a potential complication. The laser that we use minimizes that because, as I said, it seals off blood vessels. There's really no bleeding at all. But if there is bleeding, bleeding can go behind the eye and actually can cause a change or a loss of vision, which is extremely rare. But the anatomy dictates that that's something that we need to be concerned of. Scarring is always a potential anytime you're making an incision. But again, the techniques that we have now.
Is there a way to tell in advance how much you think someone might scar? I guess there's no way to tell.
Well, if they say, you know, I've had 16 surgeries before and I have 16 huge scars, then chances are they're going to have a problem. But those you would avoid. But, you know, again, the eyelids heal up remarkably well. We have in the upper eyelid, you can hide incisions in the folds of your eyelids or the crow's feet that you have, so it makes it very concealable. And usually scarring is not a huge issue.
What is more common, the upper eyelid surgeries or the lower?
I think the upper eyelids are more common than that. Mm-hmm. A lot of times the upper eyelids present a functional problem, that they limit your peripheral vision.
I'm thinking
vision.
That with older people.
Yeah.
We people see are living longer. They're
It's, you know, everything sort of drops as we age.
Yeah.
And so your
gravity,
eyes.
I hate
exactly.
That.
It's no one's friend. No
Not
one's
just our
friend.
Eyes either, unfortunately.
Correct. And so the eyes are no different. The brow pushes down. It makes more skin overhanging the eye. And it can really limit it, sort of like a horse blinder, that you can't see the periphery. And people have gotten car accidents. They can't see this. They're bumping into things. And especially in older patients, it can really be a problem. And so this is a relatively straightforward and simple procedure that can really help these people take away the functional problem that they're having.
And on these procedures, can they do both eyes concurrently, or do they have to do one eye and then come back and do another eye?
No, we do both eyes at the same time. Only very rarely would I do one eye at a time. And the reason for that is just I think if you're going to recover, you might as well recover both at the same time. Again, functionally, you're able to see, you're able to function. You got a little bit of swelling, but I think to take time out of your life and your loved ones who've got to care for you, I just hate to inconvenience patients more than we absolutely have to.
Yeah, they probably appreciate that too. So we've talked quite a bit about trauma conditions and cosmetic conditions. What would be the third kind of big group of eye conditions that you would treat?
I guess we'd call it like a functional or malposition category. And these are functional ptosis, as I mentioned before. Ptosis is a drooping, which is a loosening of the tendon that holds the eye into its normal position, hold the eyelid rather into its normal position. Sometimes the eyelids can spontaneously turn inward on patients, and that is a condition we call an entropion, and that's when the eyelashes scrape on the eye on a constant basis, which is a very difficult problem, a very painful problem. You can imagine, I've gotten an eyelash in my eye, and one eyelash hurts. They have about 30 or 40 of them scraping on their eye at any time. And so that's due to a laxity and a stretching of the tendon on the bottom eyelid. and the tendons sort of not maintaining their attachment sources. So those need to be readdressed.
So what's the correction? What do you do?
You have to reattach the tendons appropriately and reposition
them. That's like microsurgery. That's like millimeters. We're back to the millimeters.
Exactly. That's the whole field. It's very, very microscopic.
Mm-hmm. So were your eyes shot after all these years?
No, I just had LASIK last year.
Good for you,
so
me too.
My eyes
are in
great
shape. We're good to go for a while. Now, one question I had when you were talking, do you treat both pediatrics and adults?
I do.
Okay, so is there any minimum age? Like, have you ever done eye surgery on – what's the youngest patient that you've ever treated?
Youngest patient, I guess, was probably about 4 or 5 months old who had an orbital tumor.
Okay.
They were born with a congenital tumor that was causing a problem and obstructing the development of their vision. So we had to deal with that urgently. We try and wait on babies as much as possible, mm-hmm. but sometimes it just needs to be done in mm-hmm. order to preserve their sight.
So would you do that surgery at Children's, or would you move that patient to one of your hospitals?
We'd probably do it at Children's.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Very good. Okay. So anything else besides the malpositioning? As far as groups of...
Skin cancers is a big category, and especially here in the South, there's a lot of sun exposure. We see a lot of skin cancer, and the eyelids are not immune to developing skin cancers. There are three main type of skin cancers that we see: basal cell carcinoma, which is the most common one. There's squamous cell carcinoma, and then melanoma. All three can affect your eyelids or any part of the surrounding structures. These can be very damaging to the structures around your eye because they would prohibit the functioning of your eyelids. Now, your eyelids serve a big function. They protect your eye. Mm-hmm. Your body has reflexes that depend upon your eyelids functioning to preserve your vision. And when these type of skin cancers grow and erode the surrounding structures, those functions can get compromised. So we see a lot of that. We see a lot of the defects created after the skin cancers are removed, and that's really where we come in. Mohs surgery is a type of surgery specific to removing cancer cells, and we work very, very closely with several Mohs surgeons.
How do you spell that?
M-O-H-S.
M-O-H-S. Is that named after the surgeon that developed that?
Okay. Yes. So that's a dermatology subspecialty mm-hmm. that we work in conjunction with in terms of they remove all the cancer cells, and it's mm-hmm. a whole process involved in that. And then the patient has a defect on their eyelid. It can range from a tiny little spot, or it can range from the entire eyelid being removed by the cancer. Mm-hmm. And it's my job to put things back together again.
So prophylactically, to help us prevent?
Is sunblock and sunglasses.
Okay.
That's the biggest thing you can do.
Okay. Very
but it can be devastating. I mean, we've seen some cases that are just incredible as to how devastating they can be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and are they rare? I would think they'd be pretty rare, but
well,
probably
I mean,
what you see is
we
dramatic.
We see a lot of them. We see a lot of it because we're sort of the end of the funnel type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of referrals come in for those. But the extent of the damage is impressive. But fortunately, we have technology and we have surgical procedures that we can put things back together again quite nicely.
Mm-hmm. What's your favorite kind of patient to treat? Or can you tell me a story that – you just really made a difference, and you were really pleased with the result, and it was very challenging for even you.
I think the overall – whenever you're helping someone improve themselves or their image or their confidence or just sort of how they feel about things, it's always a nice, gratifying experience. But, kids are a big source of gratification in terms of surgical improvement. There are lots of kids – that we see who have a variety of problems ranging from orbital tumors, big tumor which causes – it just causes an altered, very, very awkward type of look and appearance. And in a kid, that's a tough time to be dealing with an awkward appearance among other mm-hmm. things. And
are those mostly grown or they're born with them?
Both. There's
both.
A congenital problems
okay.
and there's also ones that develop through childhood.
Okay.
And so to be able to preserve someone's vision, to save their eye and to make them look normal again – is a really nice thing to be able to provide.
Mm-hmm.
There are patients who come in who've been dealing with an issue that they think is not much of an issue. They've been passed along. They've been treating it for years. One particular patient that I can recall had what she thought was a sty, which is a very common thing, which most people are aware of. And she came in and it just didn't look like a sty to me. It didn't behave like a sty. Her history was not consistent with this thing just being a size. So we went ahead and removed it, and it turned out to be a lymphoma, which is cancer that had affected her orbit, for which she was then cured from after a little bit of radiation and the diagnosis. So she was one that I like thinking of because it was a nice difference that I was able to contribute to her life.
Mm-hmm. Very good. So certainly make a difference every day, but certainly those extreme cases make it worth getting up for
exactly.
Sure. Yeah, very good. All right. Well, anything else that you can talk to while we have the listeners and referring docs on the phone, you want to make sure that they know about your specialty or what you're able to do or your special areas of interest.
Right. Well, again, oculoplastics is just concentrated around the eyes, the orbit, and the soft tissues that surround it. I use a lot of laser because I think it's an excellent surgical tool. We see patients ranging from little babies to elderly patients, both for both functional and cosmetic problems. We are happy to see any patient that think may benefit from our services. Thomas Eye Group has multiple locations all around the city. Our main office, where I'm at usually, is next to St. Joseph's Hospital at the 5671 building. We have an operating room in that building where we do almost all of our cases with a fully staffed anesthesiologist to make sure everyone's as safe and comfortable as possible.
Mm-hmm. Very good. And patients can find you at www.thomaseye.com. Is that correct?
Correct.
And is there a general phone number or they just call their local office?
General number is 678-892-2020.
Okay, sounds great. Well, thank you so much for being with us today. We've certainly enjoyed getting to know you and this particular specialty. And Thomas Eye Group is a great asset in our city. So see one of their fine ophthalmologists when you have the need. Thank you so much for being here today. I've enjoyed it.
Thanks for having me.
The Doctor's Roundtable has been a production brought to you by HealthGate and Business Radio X. HealthGate is a groundbreaking website where board-certified doctors and specialists offer savings on out-of-pocket healthcare costs. For more information about HealthGate, please visit www.healthgate.com or call 404-692-5377. We hope you tune in next week, and thank you for listening.